KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.
It's time for KPBS Midday Edition. On today's show, we're talking about the arts and culture shaping San Diego. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. A new exhibit from the African American Museum of Fine Art is celebrating the stories of African American women throughout history with a curated fashion collection, then a convention to celebrate and empower San Diego's Filipino-American creative community, plus your weekend preview. That's ahead on Midday Edition. A new exhibit weaves together the stories of African-American women across history through the garments they wore. It is called Clothes Story. It was brought here in partnership with the San Diego African-American Museum of Fine Art, and it's on display now at the Mesa College Art Gallery. Joining me live to talk about the exhibit is curator and cultural event director Kenneth Green. Kenneth, welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me today.
Well, I'm so glad you took the time and that you're here. So tell me, how did the idea for this exhibit first come to be?
Well, Clothes Story is an exhibition that really first starts with stories. I've been working on Clothes Story for about maybe 4 years now physically, but probably in my head about maybe 10, 15 years. I think two ways we really got it started. One, it became a matter of space. I'm a cultural event designer in Atlanta, and I build lots of historical events. So as you can imagine, I collect lots of props, lots of costumes, lots of music, just a lot of things. But then what really brought it into focus was the George Floyd event. As during that time, I really started to kind of assess my life and started to think about, well, when it's all said and done, what are you leaving behind? So as I looked through all of these things, I had to get rid of things. And as I started to get rid of things, I began to look at the apparel that we built over the years. Mm-hmm. I built historical events for Congressman John Lewis when he was alive. I was the lead producer and director for the unveiling of the Martin Luther King event on the Mall in Washington, D.C. So if you can imagine, I had a lot of content. So I just kind of weeded through things and I lined up this clothing and I said, I think you have something here. And as I looked at these women in this clothing, one thing led to the next and we ended up with Clothes Story.
Yeah. I mean, so what was really the impetus, though, there? What made you say, let me tell the stories of African-American women through fashion?
Well, African-American women have been in the shadows for a long time. I've worked at Spelman College as a professor for many years. So as you can imagine, I'm around a lot of content that focuses on women. But as I've done my personal research and research that had to do with events, corporate events, academic events, there was just a liking of stories that I felt some were told that we're very familiar with and many, many, many stories that we're not familiar with. So I was really focused on the stories and I really wanted to tell some stories of these amazing women, of just women you probably are not as familiar with.
Well, yeah. Well, so the exhibit highlights clothes and stories from 1889 all the way up to 1963, and that's nearly 80 years of history there. So what are some of the specific stories and time periods you're highlighting here?
Well, as you mentioned, we start 1889. We do tell the story of Clara Howard. She was the first valedictorian of Spelman College. So we have a beautiful dress that she wore on her graduation day. All of the clothing in clothes store are all replicas. Everything were pulled from various archives from out the Southeast, largely in Atlanta at the African American Library in Atlanta and Spelman and College Library, the AUC libraries, Clark Atlanta University libraries. And we looked at great pictures of great fashion, and we followed up, well, what were the stories behind these pictures? And we just kind of put them in categories. We put them in categories by topic, by time period. And then we just begin to choose an assortment of clothing that just kind of had the gamut, and that some that were very ornate, some that were very, very plain. So there was one story that I particularly found fascinating, and that was the story of Dorothy Bolden. And Dorothy Bolden was a domestic in Atlanta, and she worked for a woman in the Atlanta. And the woman wanted her to stay another 4 hours when she had already put in a 12-hour day. And she said, ma'am, I can't stay. So she had her arrested. She was put under psychiatric evaluation because she talked back to a white woman. So those stories you don't hear about. Later, she started the Domestic Workers Union. She started out with 5 women in that union, and she ended up with 30,000 women in that union by the time it was all said and done. Her story you don't hear about. So I think those are great stories that I wanted to highlight in the exhibition. Some of her clothing was just kind of regular, but we do have some clothing that's regular and some clothing that seems to be a little bit more fashionable and a little bit more ornate.
Wow, that's great. Well, could you describe to our listeners some of the garments they can expect to see?
Yes, we have Leontine Price in the exhibition, which is one of my favorites. Leontine really was very popular in her performance of Aida. So we went through a lot of the costumes that she wore for Aida, and there was one in particular that she seemed to wear more often than not. So that dress we replicated, and that's in the piece. There's a great Billie Holiday piece, which is in our Glamour collection. We did take a little license because she wore the gardenias in her hair. So we added gardenias down her back in her dress, which is beautiful. We do have Diane Carroll. We replicated her dress when she was on the cover of Ebony magazine in 1964. We have Betty Shabazz in the collection. We have Mahalia Jackson in the collection. And we have the first black female doctors, two of them, a Dr. Eliza Greer and Dr. Rebecca Crumpler in 1885. So there's a vast array of dresses. Some are more ornate than others, but beautiful dresses and beautiful stories.
Yeah, and clothes are really an interesting way to tell those stories. You worked with tailors and seamstresses to bring these clothes to life, and you can really see how, you know, just how each piece is made with a lot of love and care. Talk to me about that.
Well, I was very fortunate. I was able to work with 3 great designers in Atlanta, and I had one designer who really was an expert doing historical dresses. So we have dresses from the Victorian era, or blacks who really lived during the Victorian era under the reign of Queen Victoria. And these were doctors and scientists and lawyers and musicians. And their dresses were quite ornate. They have the bustles and the petticoats and the bumps that are added to the rear and the back. Those designers did a wonderful job. We don't have a lot of designers. I didn't run across a lot of designers who could fabricate those dresses. We did fabricate a Coretta Scott's dress, Coretta Scott King. Before she married Dr. King, she was an opera singer in Boston. Mm. And she has a beautiful dress that you can see online in lots of places. And you can see in the exhibition that we have in Mesa College. It's a beautiful pink satin dress. And it has a lot of ruching to it. So if you can imagine that, probably the closest dress that you'll find that's familiar is the Belle dress from Beauty and the Beast. The Belle dress is very similar to what Coretta Scott King wore when she concertized in Boston, but it's a beautiful dress. And that's just, just kind of a sampling of the things that we have in the collection. There are about 30 pieces in the collection right now, on display at Mesa College. In the collection, I have about 65 pieces that all range from 1889 to 65. And I kind of stuck with that time period because for me, I am not a historian or a designer. I'm really more of a fashion enthusiast. But I found those time periods to be the most interesting for me when it came to my creative work in women's fashion.
Indeed. I mean, and the thing is so many people would not have even known that Coretta Scott King was an opera singer, if not for, telling this story through fashion. I mean, every outfit we wear really does tell a story. What do you think is this exhibit says about how we use fashion to communicate who we are?
Well, that's a great question, but we do use fashion as a way of self-expression. Our clothing choices allow us to express our personality, moods, values, cultural belonging. Fashion reflects cultural heritage, traditions, community ties. Wearing certain garments or styles can honor our ancestry, affirm our individual identity, shared identity, social signals. Fashion often conveys status, profession, lifestyle. So there are all kinds of ways that fashion kind of plays into our relationship to identity, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Clo Story first showed in Atlanta, but has since traveled all across the country. What's it been like, to see the reception to this exhibit here in San Diego?
The reception has been phenomenal. One thing that really has strikes me the most when I look at kind of similar responses from city to city, and we largely have been throughout the Southeast. This is our first trip to the West Coast, so this has been very exciting. This has been a big opportunity for us. But what I get from a lot of folk that see it, they have an opportunity to reminisce. And they often say, my mom wore that, my auntie wore that, my grandmother had a dress like that. I did a corporate event and we had to set up at maybe like midnight one night. So the only ones that were in the building were the cleaning crew, were the men. And the men were taking pictures and I stopped and talked with them. And some of the men were just so emotionally involved in what we were doing because they said, my grandmother, my great grandmother wore a dress like this. So people have a great connection in terms of remembrance and remembering their family members who actually have worn some of the clothing that they've saw throughout the collection.
Wow. Well, as we wrap up, is there anything you really want people to take away from Clo's story?
Well, for myself, it always has been about the stories. The clothing seems to get people in the door, and I'm loving that. But there's so many amazing stories of these amazing women who have done amazing things that I would just love people to kind of come and read about. And the clothing is just a is a is just kind of a an added bonus. We've worked very hard to build the clothing so they're historically accurate, so that they live and they breathe on the mannequins. But there's just great stories of these great women that I think their experiences and should be shared and remembered as well. So I hope everyone will come out to Mesa College and visit Clo Story. Clo Story will be in place until October the 15th.
Sounds like an excellent exhibit. Well, I've been speaking with curator and cultural event director Kenneth Green. Clo's story again will be on display at the Mesa College Art Gallery from now through October 16th. Kenneth, thank you so much for your creativity and for joining us today.
The pleasure was all mine, and thank you.
Still to come, a convention to celebrate and empower San Diego's Filipino-American creative community. Hear more when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
I'm Dr. Rachel Jans, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the San Diego Museum of Art. We're presenting a landmark exhibition of Eduardo Chillida, a visionary sculptor who transformed the way we think about form, space, and material. Eduardo Chillida, Convergence, is the most expansive U.S. presentation of the artist's work in nearly 50 years, bringing together monumental sculptures, delicate works on paper, and a virtual reality experience of his iconic Comb of the Wind installation on the Basque coast of Spain. Eduardo Chillida Convergence is on view now through February 8, 2026 at the San Diego Museum of Art in Balboa Park. Learn more at sdmaart.org.
Welcome back to Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. PhilAm CreatorCon had its inaugural convention last year in National City. Its goal was to celebrate, support, and empower San Diego's Filipino-American creative community. KPBS arts reporter Beth Accomando gets a preview of year two with founder Aaron Nabus and artist Zard Apuya and author Ev Nguyen. Take a listen.
We are out here in front of the Chula Vista Library, which is going to be the location for this year's PhilAm CreatorCon. And Aaron, this is your second year, so what did you learn from your first year that you're going to be able to apply this year?
Well, at the end of last year, we definitely knew that we needed a bigger spot. That was a common thing that people were saying, that you guys need a bigger spot next year. And so we heard you, and we are at the Chula Vista Library this time around on F Street, Civic Center Branch. This year, we are going to be able to have twice as many exhibitors, so from 18 last year to 40 this year, and we'll also have 6 community tables, and food will be here too. Our programming is going to increase by double as well. Last year we had about 8 panels. This year we're going to have about 17 or 18. We have a lot of things lined up, and we're trying to finalize possibly a musical performance element, so we'll see how that's going to go.
And Art, you were involved last year helping get this off the ground. What is it about the event that kind of impressed you or that made you want to be a part of it that first year?
We don't have anything like this. Actually, I met Aaron on a podcast to talk about my comic, and then it kind of came up, and that just fascinated me that he was trying to find a way to bring light to Filipino-American creators. And I don't think we have much of that kind of representation outside of maybe small bits of us that are in conventions. But having a convention dedicated to Filipinos and Filipino-American creators, specifically just creative folks, not just comics, but radio, music, acting, all of it, anything in the creative space, visual and performing, was really, I had a big smile. And I was like, Aaron, if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. And he invited me to be part of the committee for the first inaugural year. And it was a lot of work. We all pulled it off, and it was so fun. It was very gratifying. As Aaron mentioned, we didn't know how much space we needed. We didn't know how many exhibitors we'd have. And the first thing we said was within minutes was, we need a bigger space next year. And that's a good thing. It's a great thing.
And for people who may not be aware, explain why San Diego is a good space to start something like this.
Well, we have a long history of the military being here, and a lot of our fathers were in the Navy. Coming from the Philippines. So the community has sprouted up around San Diego, both down south east and now up north, there's just a huge population boom of Filipino Americans in San Diego. So, you know, with that said, we kind of thought we were at a good opportunity to create a space for Filipino American creators to showcase the work and for us to promote and celebrate them.
And Zard, they have a year under their belt already. You are coming to this brand new. So what was the attraction for you?
Oh, yes. Well, I did hear about it last year, but unfortunately I heard about it afterwards, you know, FOMO. You're like, oh, I wish I was part of it. And so I made a point to make sure I'm like on the email list. I follow on Instagram just so I'm aware when they start sending applications. And these kind of events are exactly what I try to look for, especially coming a long way. I'm originally from Guam and it's like 25 to 30% Filipino. So like, we're predominantly all over the place, but moving to the mainland, especially California, it's like you always trying to gravitate towards like the Filipino communities because these are people, you know, you understand you, like you have a lot in common. So with the creative community specifically, like this is where you get to see other Filipinos and how they kind of like portray our culture in all different means, like whether they're visuals, performers. And so I feel like this specific convention with Filam creators is the perfect space. Because I'm all about building a community and meeting new artists, creators, and in every kind of like, you know, discipline out there. So, you know, I'm excited to be part of it for the first time this year.
And you do put the word creator in the name of your event. Is part of the goal for you also to make this a networking event for the artists who come?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not only for the artists that come that are already established, but for the next generation of creators who want to sort of see how it is for actual working professionals who do this for a living, to see that it is possible. You know, we do appreciate our nurses and our engineers, but, you know, there is the A in STEAM, so that's also important too. So it's I'm glad that we have this opportunity to create a space for a lot of knowledge sharing between, you know, peers and also generations. I think that's important.
And you talked about next generation and also sharing information. Art, you are going to be on a panel this year, and what's that going to be?
I'm actually doing a panel with a buddy of mine, Patrick Ballesteros. We'll be sharing some interactive drawing with the audience, and exactly what Aaron was saying. It's purely to empower the younger generation. In our culture, usually anything with the arts, especially in the beginning, is very celebrated, and then as you get older, it's a great hobby. And I want to take the word hobby out of there. It's a passion, and the passion can become a profession. My whole career has been surrounded in the arts. I was an animator for The Simpsons and Futurama. I was in advertising creative for about 16 years, and now I'm doing video production. I'm doing comics. My house was paid for by my creative career. So it's not a pipe dream. It's totally within reach. And if we could not just empower the young generation, but also show their respective parents that it's totally practical. It's completely practical and it's attainable and it's not a pipe dream, then it could only open up their horizons just a little more. And if we could do that through showing two successful artists on stage, having fun with younger folk, and then even be able to answer some of those questions with parents later, we'll be glad to do that for sure.
And Aaron, some of this sounds a little bit like what Keith and Jones has been doing with Black Comics Day, which is, I think, in its sixth or seventh year. Is that something that also inspired you to get this going?
Most definitely. As I say in other past interviews that I've done, Keith and Jones's Black Comics Day was definitely an inspiration. It showed me that it was possible to have something like this come to fruition. I've always had something like this in the back of my head ever since I learned that the hero in Starship Troopers in the book was actually Filipino. When I finally learned that was the case, my mind was blown. Just imagine if I would have learned that at a younger age, and just imagine how much an impact that could be on someone else at a younger age. So ever since I learned that, and ever since, you know, all the times I've gone to Comic-Con, I see a wealth of Filipino American talent that's there. I kind of thought, what if I pull those people together? I've done a podcast for the last few years. I've gotten to know the community. There's a lot of community organizers here in San Diego. So we kind of just pulled our resources together and we made it happen. This is our second year. It's incredible. I'm so excited.
And Zard, you are an artist and you will be vending this year. So talk a little bit about what your art is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am, it's kind of like almost like a new kind of medium. I'm a toy artist, but also like a sculptor. But specifically what I do as an artist, I customize figurines, customize toys, but I also sculpt, hand paint everything myself. It's very active in the pop culture community, but I specifically found what my niche is, and it's on the food side. So I do sculptures, food art, it's like food figurines. So it's inspired by food, the food culture in general. So popular brands, restaurants, but I kind of found a way to apply my culture into it. So like, if you see all the art I've done, you see Filipino food represented many times in all forms. A lot of popular things I grew up eating as a kid. I like the nostalgic part about it too. Whether you grew up eating like all the traditional Filipino food, or some I met like they've never tried it before, but like later in life they learn to, you know, learn about it or they learn to appreciate it. So this is where I come in as a food artist. Like, wouldn't you love to see like adobo as a figurine, right? And you know, the cool thing is like it doesn't go bad. You could actually display it. So that's the fun part. Every time I do my events, I try to put all kinds of foods out there and then kind of like see people start to like build connections. Like, oh, I remember eating that as a kid. I love that one. So I think for this specific event, for the PhilAm Creator Con, I'm going to have tons of Filipino food. And I want people to have that reaction when they visit my booth. Like, oh, I remember eating that as a kid, or I love that, or like it reminds me of the Philippines, reminds me of home. Reminds me of what my mom and grandma used to make. So I always like that emotional aspect of it. And that's why I like creating these kind of, you know, food art. So.
And Art, you talked about being an animator on The Simpsons. You are vending also. What will you be presenting or selling this year?
My main focus right now is pushing out my story called California Inc. The quick log line is, in the near future, California becomes a corporate country with factions fighting to shape the new nation. So if you're fans of shows like Showtime's Homeland, HBO's Succession, you got some military tactics and some boardroom backstabbing. It's a 4-issue miniseries. I wrote it back in 2017. I didn't illustrate it, although I'm an illustrator by trade. I focus on writing. I met my illustrative friend Dave back in 2021. And we got the first issue out in 2023, and we just finished a final issue, the fourth issue, a few months ago. So it's nice to have the full set complete. Since those 2 years, I've been working on meeting more creators, and I'm now collaborating with a lot more on some other projects that I'm working on at this moment. So we have a Kickstarter called for an anthology called Systemic right now that's actually live, and it's doing really well. Got some great folks in there that I'm excited to be collaborating with, but here specifically for this event, I'll be focusing on pushing out California Inc. I do have some artwork with me, some old drawings that I have from when I used to work on The Simpsons, and then some prints from that Pac-Man event that Patrick and I worked on.
And what are the challenges these days for like self-publishing a comic? I mean, there's a lot of things that have changed that have made it easier in some respects, but how does it feel trying to self-publish these things?
The very first time as an unknown quantity was probably the scariest. Now that, you know, I've been around for the last 2 years and been through a few events, it's gotten easier, right? But even then, it's still a challenge. I'm not gonna say it's easy. It's a lot of work. It's a job in itself, making the book itself, and then promoting the book before it gets put through Kickstarter. Then the campaign itself is always work. And then there's the fulfillment afterwards, making sure you print it, making sure you make it, make sure you ship it and fulfill everybody who pre-ordered it. I think the hardest part for us who are indie is distribution, especially now that Diamond, who did make it easier for us later on to get in, is now defunct to a certain degree. If not, I think it's completely gone. We have Lunar and all these other ones, but they're still iffy on how to connect with it. But the self-publishing world has expanded significantly. A lot of bigger names have moved on to do their own self-publishing, only because there's more control on their end, more money in their pockets. They're being supported directly by their audience. And then there's also ways to thank the audience by giving them more back to go along with their rewards. So it's a whole new world with self-publishing. And when back, you know, just as far back as 10 years ago, especially in the world of prose, when you couldn't get published and you get self-published, the stigma was, well, I couldn't get published. Where now I'm choosing self-publish to keep as many rights as I can for myself, to keep the IP and control how it's being distributed and how it's being put out, and not having to have a gatekeeper in the editor of the publishing company to maybe change your story. I do recommend having an editor in general for your books, but maybe not have someone change your story if you have a specific vision.
And Aaron, what do you want to talk about this year in terms of what you have programmed or what's new and different?
Well, one thing that we're going to take advantage of here at the library is their auditorium. We're going to have an opportunity to actually screen a couple of short films this year. So the first one is something called Revolt and Kismet. It's a music video by the Real Bariani and Mark Teodosio. He's coming in from New York, I believe. And the second one that we want to highlight is one by Megan Reyes. She's a host of the San Diego Wave. And her movie is about, it's called Between Two Worlds. and it's her experience going to the Philippines and learning about how soccer is over there and how it relates to, you know, back and forth between here and the States. So we're looking forward to that as well. Yeah, a couple of the other significant panels that we're going to have in the auditorium is one called Larry the Musical. It's by Brian Pangilinan. And it's basically the story of Larry Ilyong and how, you know, his side of the story during the grape strikes back in the day. So that's going to be important and really an awesome opportunity to have that down here. So taking advantage of the auditorium, we got the movie screenings and keynote speeches. Yeah, it's going to be a fun packed day. Can't wait.
And Zard, what are you hoping to like gain from this in terms of finding new fans or like networking? What do you hope that you'll get from attending this?
This being my first year participating, what I hope to get out of it is building my network with all the other vending creators or even just anyone who's visiting, who comes visit me at my booth, you know, like new fans or maybe existing collectors who have supported me over the years. But what I get out of doing conventions, art shows, pop-up markets here and there, I like building my network of others who are like, whether they're a fellow toy artist, they're a fellow foodie, they're another creator. I mean, just like, I feel like the important part, it's just growth. It's just like having the community, because you never know in the future where they could like share an opportunity where like they could, hey, I heard about this thing, you'd be interested. Has happened over to me many times. That's why I believe in that, you know, never burn bridges. Just kind of like, it's just like very important. And so I also use that in the other way where if I know of any other opportunities, I could always reach out to like, oh, I remember meeting this artist in this one event. They might be good for this fit. Because, you know, people like to refer each other. And I think that's very important too. This is going to be my first year. Definitely hope to be part of it every year. I look forward to see it growing, you know.
And Darren, any final words for what you want to tell people to expect?
Although we're called PhilAm CreatorCon, it is open to everybody to attend. And that's something that I really was happy to see last year, was just the different kinds of, you know, cultures represented, generations represented. I think by our estimations last year, about 500 people showed up. Hopefully, you know, we get that same amount of crowd this year, if not more. And it's a free event, open to the public, family friendly. And it's a unique opportunity for, you know, the general public to connect with a lot of our professionals, our Filipino-American professionals. So we're looking forward to it. September 20th, here at the Chula Vista Library, the Civic Center branch on F Street from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Look forward to a bunch of exhibitors, about 40 of them, and 17 panels. And we'll see about that musical element. We'll see if we can work that one out.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
That was Beth Accomando speaking with Aaron Nabuse, founder of PhilAm CreatorCon, and artist Zard Apuya and author Evwin. The event is free, but attendees are encouraged to register at philamcreatorcon.org. Coming up next, a look at your weekend preview. More when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfiresafety.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. For our weekend preview, there's art inspired by psychology, a play about San Diego in the 1800s, and plenty more. Joining me with all the details is KPBS arts reporter and host of our culture podcast, The Finest, Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, welcome. Always great to have you on.
Hey, Jade. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first, let's talk about a new art exhibit that connects psychology and the way our eyes move when we look at art. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. So this is at Best Practice Gallery. It's artist Ava Swapa, and the exhibit is called Lines, Planes, Bodies. So Swapa is an artist and a sculptor based in LA, and she was inspired by like the 1950s and 60s era psychologist Alfred Jarbus, who he studied eye movements and the way that humans actually like biologically perceive things. So we see things through like a series of fragmented, jumpy shifts across like a series of scattered points. It's not a linear scan. And Yarba studied how these shifts are really individual and they're based on the beholder, like what questions they're bringing to the scene, what biases they have. And he also studied the way that this eye movement process happens when people are looking at art or at a painting. One painting, specifically, the artist Ilya Repin's Unexpected Visitor. And what Swapa has done with this research is that she's transcribed it kind of into steel, into these steel sculptures. They're like lines protruding from the floor. And she's also created work using machine modeling that silkscreened a map overlay of the eye movements on that painting. I really love the way that she's combined history and science with art like this. It's going to be a really interesting show. It's at Best Practice. That's inside Bread and Salt in Logan Heights. It's going to open on Saturday and stay on view through October 18th. They'll have an opening reception from 5 to 8 on Saturday, and all of the galleries will be open late.
And that's not the only thing going on, because this is happening during the Barrio Art Crawl during that night. So there's plenty going on, correct?
Yeah. So starting at Bread and Salt, you also have artist and filmmaker Jason Sherry. He's giving a talk and a screening of his film Prometheus 2, which was actually filmed entirely inside Bread and Salt. Helena Westra, we've talked about her a little while ago. She has installed this meadow of native grasses. That's at the Athenaeum Art Center, and that's totally worth a peek. You can kind of even like meander through the meadow. And then just a short walk away in the main area of Barrio Logan, there is an exhibit at Raiz Community Space. It's by tattooist and artist Jesus. And there's always so much going on. The restaurants and the shops are always open with live music and all sorts of stuff. It's a great night.
Ah, very nice. Well, also in visual art, the Studio Door Gallery in Hillcrest has a new special exhibit. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, so it's called The Studio Door Studio Artists, Past and Present. And it's meant to celebrate an entire decade of art at the gallery and also kind of serve as a reunion and a time capsule of art in the area. They have pieces by 30-something artists. There's Laura Green, Linda Littoral, Andrew Torres, and Patrick Stillman, the gallerist. It's all on view through September 26th, so just a couple weeks left. And there will be a reception from 6 to 9 this Saturday.
Well, and for the photography lovers, you have an option in Escondido. What can we expect with Sleight of Hand?
Yeah, so The Photographer's Eye, this is a collective and a gallery space in Escondido, and they put together this juried exhibit every year. And it's of photography using alternative or historic processes, so things like tintypes or cyanotypes or salt prints. And this year they got 500 entries. They selected the best, the top 50 photographers. And the jurors also gave out jurors' choice awards. One of them went to a San Diego photographer, Robert Treat, who has some really creative cyanotypes in the show. One of my favorite local artists is also in the show, Annalise Neal. She has some nature-inspired, extremely detailed cyanotypes. Those are really incredible to look at. There's photographs that are kind of like wrapped around a series of branches that are then stitched together. It looks almost like a raft. There's Kemi Lumen prints. These look really surreal, and they apparently took over 3 days to expose in a dark room. I love stuff like this where it's also, you know, you have this incredible art to look at, but then thinking about the process is a whole other layer to it. The exhibit opens at 11 on Saturday, and they're having an artist reception that evening at 5 p.m., and it'll be on view through October 4th. The gallery is always free, and it's open Fridays and Saturdays from 11 to 5.
Sounds like a lot of fun. And you're right. I mean, looking at the process always builds so much appreciation for the art. Well, so next up, Trinity Theater in Mission Valley is opening a unique new play. Let's hear about Thorn and Petal.
So this is a new play by Daniel Redman. It's about San Diego in the mid-1800s with one of the early developers and pioneers, Lewis Rose. He was believed to be San Diego's first Jewish settler, and it follows his life. Some of the things named after Rose were Rose Canyon, the Roseville neighborhood in Point Loma. So they were not named after roses. I did not know that. The story follows Rose as he arrives in San Diego and begins to, you know, leave his mark and shape the town. But it also asks the audience to reflect on their own stories. There's some interactive audience participation elements in the play. So be prepared. I love stuff like that too.
Yeah.
It opens Friday and it runs through September 21st. And this is the theater that is literally inside Mission Valley Mall.
Nice. Okay, so well, let's stay with theater for one more. You just saw The Heart at La Jolla Playhouse. What did you think of that?
Oh, it was really surprising to me. I loved it. I mean, I knew I was going to love it, but it was surprising to me in all these other ways. It's a musical, but it has an electronic music backdrop. The singing is like your quintessential musical theater style, but then to have that like texture, that layer of electronic music was really, really interesting and vibrant. The choreography is also another really great element. One thing I didn't realize is that the play is set in San Diego. It's centered on the life and the actual heart of a 19-year-old surfer and the journey of an organ donation. It's just this beautiful story. It's funny. I laughed out loud quite a lot, but it's also really sad. And yeah, I'm a big fan of medical procedural dramas, so it's checked all the boxes for me. And it got extended again, but it has to close October 5th, so it won't be extended anymore. This is your last chance for tickets. And one thing the theater recommends is to check their Instagram stories for ticket releases. So if you're interested in getting tickets for this weekend shows, that's probably your best bet. Another option is their rush tickets feature. That's for students, seniors, and active military. They will release like a block of tickets an hour before the show for half price. And you can call the box office the day of the show to find out if that's going to happen for that particular show.
Wow. All right. Well, here's an option that combines comedy and visual art with comedian Dimitri Martin.
Yeah, so Dimitri Martin, he is known for this like unique deadpan type of comedy. He was a contributor on The Daily Show. He wrote for Conan O'Brien, had his own Comedy Central special, a couple of albums, books, films, you name it. And he's on tour right now. His tour is called The Quick Draw Tour. And he brings out one of those big pads of paper and draws during the set, like live drawing. But also like not that great. And I think that's part of the humor. He's doing these like very basic drawings and to sort of go with that deadpan style. And this is Friday night at the Balboa Theater downtown.
All right. Well, City Ballet of San Diego has performances this weekend. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so this is their Sinatra production. It takes its name from Jeffrey Gonzalez's ballet, Summer Wind. Gonzalez is City Ballet's resident choreographer, and this piece is set to orchestral arrangements of Sinatra tunes, so you can expect some really recognizable music for the dancers. And they're also doing a ballet created earlier this year by Elizabeth Wistrich, also a resident choreographer with City Ballet. This one's called The Seasons, and it's set to music by a Russian composer, Alexander Glazunov. There's 2 evening shows at the Epstein Family Amphitheater at UC San Diego, Friday and Saturday night, and that's it.
Okay, so let's talk about live music now as we wrap up, because you know I like to hear about it. What's on your radar this weekend?
Okay, so tonight, indie rock band Granddaddy, they're going to celebrate the 25th anniversary of an amazing album, The Software Slump. This was a really formative album for me. This is a track from that called The Crystal Lake.
Should never have left the crystal lake. The party's full of folks who flake. Italian leather, winter games. We're tired by the Duraflames. The crystal lake.
And also on the bill is Pedro the Lion, who actually also lived in Modesto, which is where Granddaddy is from. This is his new track from his brand new album, and the track is called Modesto.
Modesto, is it boring like you thought it would be? Modesto, it's not baloney like you thought it would be.
And the show is tonight at Observatory North Park. And then one more. Friday night, Mestizo Beat is playing a free show at Lulu's at the Lafayette Hotel. Two free shows, actually. They're doing an 8 o'clock and a 10 p.m. And they're an LA-based Latin funk group. They're instrumentalists, and they draw on a whole bunch of genres like hip-hop, rock, afrobeat, retro soul. This is their track, She's a Rose. And Lulu's is a really fun place to see a show, especially if it's free. Love yes, that.
Of course. All right, good stuff. You can find details on these and more arts events on our website at kpbs.org. I've been speaking with KPBS arts reporter and host of our culture podcast, The Finest, Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, thanks.
Thank you, Jade.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're Voices del Valle.
Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a team-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.